Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello and welcome to another edition of your favourite podcast, Insane in the Membrane.
Insane in the Membrane.
Welcome, Brainers. Membraners. I can't remember, we were going to have a nickname, weren't we, for us? I can't remember, that fell right away, so I did it pretty quick. But welcome aboard. Good to see you. Thank you to our listeners for continuing to support us. Thank you to new listeners. Thank you to everyone for taking the time to shove this in your lug holes. We really appreciate it. I hope you're doing all right. I'm actually on the up. I feel I had a moment the other week. I was down, I was low, but I reached out, asked for help, and now I'm on the up. It's a weird. I feel better than I have in a long time. It's a nice place to be. I've thrown off the shackles of the past. Running headlong into the future. It's a good times, I feel, are ahead of us as we come out of these dark days. Hang on a little bit more, hang on tight. I know we're hanging on by our fingertips already, but hang on a little bit longer and we'll be out of this. Don't you worry about that. It's coming. The sun will soon be shining and we'll be back out touching and hugging and all that kind of business. So don't you worry about that. Thank you to our patrons as well. Patreons, thank you for your continued support. Thank you to our new Patreons. We have Carly Giles, Teresa Coyne and Kelly Gingle. Or Ging, is it Gingle? I assume it's Gingle. Or Gin, it's not Gingle, is it? No, it wouldn't be Gingle. Gingle, I imagine it's Gingle. Thank you. Thank you so much for jumping up and becoming our patrons. Yeah, we really appreciate that. And to all of our other patrons. Now, there's some of you that are like, you're like top end patrons. And I said to you that I would do I'd have a chat with you. And I haven't got round to it yet, but I am going to. So either drop me a line and say, oi, where's my bloody chat? Or I'll get your email addresses and I'll come find you and we'll have a chat, we'll have a chinwag. I said I would do that and I'm going to do it. So, so thank you for that. Also, we did a thing the other week. Now, producer Paul and I do a radio show on Islington Radio called The Tuned Up Time Machine. And we've got a Twitch channel as well that we're going to start using a little bit more. And we put a party on via Twitch the other week. That was so well received. People were saying, we had some chat going on, a couple of screens up, and we were dancing, and then we were taking requests from people in the chat, and a bit of back and forth messaging and music playing, and it was wonderful. We're only supposed to do an hour, and we did three. So, what we're going to do, if you want, Paul and I, via the Tuned Up Time Machine, you can hire us if you want, and we will DJ a party for you in your flat, in your house, wherever you are. We'll set it up from our end, so you just got the music pumping out, and then you can, and away we go. It's a really good fun thing that we did, and I think it's really good to boost the morale of the people out there. So there's something for you. You can hire the Tuned Up Time Machine. Producer Paul and I will give you a party. How about that? So let's do that. That'll be great fun. So yeah. So thank you everybody for your continued support and hopefully we'll be out of this soon enough, as I've already said. So our guest this week, I've known him many years. I met him when he booked me for his comedy night. Him and his lovely wife Emma booked me for their comedy night, Class Comedy. And Josh Phillips. Josh Phillips is the keyboard player in Procol Harum. As well as he was the band that were in Quadrophenia, the movie, the Pete Townshend, the Who movie. As well as other things, he's also the guy that wrote the theme tune for Strictly. So, you know, he's a man of many talents, and he knows a lot of people in the music biz. And he's just a lovely dude. And we talked ages ago about him coming on. And it's one of those things, is like, you know, when I see people, I'm like, oh, come on, like, yeah. And then we never get around to sorting it out. And then I'm like, oh yeah, Josh, let's get Josh on. He's such a lovely man. And it was a real pleasure to have him on, as it is with everybody that comes on. It was just nice that what you'll hear is two friends that haven't seen each other for a while catching up. I know that doesn't sound as exciting to other people, but it was actually a really nice chat. So listen, let's just stop rambling. Let's get on with it. Coming up in a bit is Josh Phillips.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A podcast from producer Paul.co.uk.
How you been, Josh? How's your mum? Is she all right? Because you were looking after her.
Yes, thank you. I just went up there the day before yesterday because, you know, she's 92 this year.
Yeah.
And she's an amazing lady. I mean, she's got extraordinary stories and incredible life history. And, I mean, she's doing all right, thanks very much. But she's on her own. My stepdad died just before Christmas.
No, I'm sorry to hear that, mate.
Oh, well, he was 304 years old. Wow. So it was about time. Actually, he was 94. But you've always got around 300 on top of it. So that was a bit odd going to the funeral. That was very strange. 15 people. There should have been about 200 there.
Yeah.
That was very odd. But thanks for asking. Mum's good. And I said, I'm going to go back yesterday, which I did, came back, as I said, because I'm doing an interview in the morning for a friend of mine who's a very fine comedian and lovely person.
Bless you.
So she said, well, do send my love.
Oh, do send it back. Oh, that's amazing. When we talked about this ages ago, about you coming on, and I never got round to it, but here you are, finally got you on.
Well, I mean, I think because I'm just not, you know, I'm in the country like the rest of us. None of us are anywhere, are we, apart from, I mean, tonight I'm going to do something really different.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I'm going to sit on the other sofa.
I find myself sitting in different places, that are, like standing on the stairs, the top of the stairs, just to find something different to do. It's been a funny one, isn't it? Hopefully we'll be coming out of this and the gigs will start, and we can start hugging again.
You know. Seriously, man, I don't know how you've coped mentally. I mean, it's been a really hard one at times, you know. I mean, I'm very lucky because I'm a composer.
Mm.
But I mean, I haven't not done a public performance of some form or other since about 1977.
Yeah, right.
And seriously, sorry, you were asking me how's my mum, so I started.
No, but the thing is, this conversation will just flow. It's just like two mates sitting in a pub, just having a chat, and whatever comes up. With no fucking beer. It's you'd have to be some kind of psychopath not to be affected by what's gone on this year. You know, like you just said, you've been performing since the mid to late 70s, and now you're stuck at home, and yeah, you've got your studio, you can go and do some work, but that that experience, being out in front of people, being amongst people, you know, we didn't realise how important it was.
No, I think that's kind of twofold. I think that's kind of behind the screen and the other side of the screen as well. I mean, think of us as we're behind the screen or behind the camera, if you like, and in front of the camera. And it's a very odd feeling because I think I've heard this from other musicians and probably comedians as well, but it's almost a little bit daunting and scary, the thought of getting back up on stage in front of 50,000 people. You know, there's a lot of festivals that we've meant to have done. And it's like, I can't imagine doing that at the moment. I actually can't imagine doing it. All of it just seems so alien. I mean, if I was to see you, let's say all the restrictions are lifted next week and I met up with you and we were allowed to have a pint together, and it apparently is allegedly all normal and we can hug and all of those things. That, I think, has been affected drastically and dramatically. That paranoia has kind of set in with us all of like, well, I don't know if I want to hug. I mean, I didn't hug my mum, even though she's had a vaccine and I had a mask on. I didn't hug her. And she said, oh, I'm sure you can put your arm around me quickly. So I gave her a quick hug as I went. Usually I'd give her a big hug and we'd be sitting together and I'd be sitting next to her on the sofa and laughing. And, you know, we had a good laugh. But going back to the music thing, that whole feeling of performing again, I'm sure it will probably just come straight back and we'll do it. Same for you. But the thought of getting up on stage initially is like, it might feel like the first time for a first couple of minutes.
I think so, yeah. Yeah. It'll be definitely. There was a moment in between these lockdowns where we did do some live stuff and we were doing it outside in gardens and things like that. And I remember, you know, I completely forgot all of my material. I forgot everything I've ever done. And I remember just standing there just like, I don't remember how to do this. And it, like you say, for a minute or two, I was like, oh my God. And I just started telling some stories, vague stories about something else. And it gradually, the wheel started to turn again and the rust started to fall away. But yeah, there was definitely a moment where you're like, oh my God, I don't remember. And there will be an element of that. But then I think the other side of it, there's going to be such excitement to be back out again that I think, hopefully pretty soon all the paranoia and that will start to drop away when we start to realise that we're not actually going to kill each other by hugging. I think that's the thing, isn't it? You're more worried. I don't know about you, but I'm worried about, I don't touch people because I'm scared that I'll infect them. Even if I don't know if I've got what I've got, you know, there is that element, you know. So yeah, it'd be nice how it goes.
I can't wait to get, have you been vaccinated yet, Rich?
No, not yet.
No, I mean, soon as possible. I just want my life back.
Yeah.
I want to go on the road again, obviously. I mean, we had, 30 something shows last year with Procol. All cancelled. I mean, it was incredible because we were meant to be doing a show at the very beginning of the year, last January, which we couldn't do because Gary had a road accident. He's okay, by the way, but he got in a car crash. Right. So that got cancelled. And then, the next set of shows was meant to be, we were starting on the 4th of March through to the 9th of March. We had four shows, and you won't believe where.
Where?
Lombardy in Italy.
What?
And that's exactly where the virus started.
Wow.
And that would have been on the 4th of March, and we would have been there, and we would have all fucking got it.
Yeah, you would have done as well. Oh, my God.
Or got it bad, I would have thought it would have gone.
Yeah.
And the bass player, he said to me, Josh, I think you're exaggerating. You know, this was about 2 weeks before. He said, I'm going. I know, you know, I'm going. We'll just have to do it without you. And I said, I don't think you will be going, Matt. I really don't think you will be. I said, I've got a feeling this is quite a big one.
Yeah, we didn't. None of us, I don't think we realised how big.
I'll tell you what I did, Rich, because we're chatting down the pub, although we're not really in a pub.
Yeah.
And this is where I question the whole thing as far as the government's inability to get anything right in this country. I mean, they don't, you know, they're claiming to be pioneers of this vaccine rollout and all the rest of it. Well, they're not. It's the NHS and it's the, you know, and it's the local authorities. It's nothing to do with Matt Hancock and the rest of the Matt Handjob, as I call him. And he, and on the 15th of February, I bought three hand sanitizers, 500 mil. I kept, and it was $4.95 a bottle. I kept one for me, and I sent one up to Oscar in a university, and one down at the studio here. That was on the 15th of February. How come I thought about it But the government didn't. It wasn't until the 23rd of March that it was a panic. Yeah. And my other thing is that was £4.95. I went to try and buy some more on March the 28th, and it was 49 quid a bottle.
Bastards.
And that was on Amazon. And I just thought, right, well, somebody knows something here more than we do. You know, because like these contracts that have been awarded, you know, the PPE contracts or have been awarded by Tory scumbags, you know, we shouldn't be getting political, but all of that then went on to create such a massive destruction of our industry, your industry, my industry, all of us, you know, and we're the first out and we're going to be the last bank. And I think that we so easily could have, probably not easily, I don't know, but I'm sure we could have, it could have been less damaging than it has been.
Yeah, if there'd been an immediate, we don't know what this is, we're locking down now, everyone's stay indoors until we figure it out.
Yeah.
But it was very vague, like you said, it's very vague, it's very kind of, we're just going to see. And then Boris said that thing about, it's herd immunity, you know, more people that get it, the more it will spread and the more, you know, we'll get through it quicker. And you're like, you arsehole, that's been the problem right from the beginning. Whereas, say, New Zealand, she just went, no one in, no one out. We're dealing with this. We're gonna get through this. We're gonna sort this out.
And they're having gigs. You know, they've got big rock festivals going on over there right now. I can't. And I think the other thing, Rich, is that, I mean, one of the gigs we were meant to do last year, which has been moved to this year, but it's already been moved yet again. We were meant to be playing at the Palladium on the 4th of, I think it was the 4th of May last year. And it's sold out, full orchestra and choir. So you've got 3,000 audience plus, you know, 100 people on stage plus the choir. I can't, and that's been moved to May the 11th now, and I think it's been moved again because it isn't going to happen. I can't see how that will happen. But I also, I don't know about you, but even as we've just said about if I was to meet you in the pub and we had a hug, etc., that whole feeling of being confident to be able to do that. But one of the shows we've got this year is on the 4th of July at Hampton open air swimming pool, which is about 5,000 people.
Wow.
I can't imagine it happening. I can't imagine 5,000 people sitting in a field together. Fuck, I hope it does. I really hope it does for all of our sakes.
Well, I tell you what, I did a gig beginning of September, Kaiser Chiefs, Gabrielle, Stereo MCs. It was big bands, Squeeze were on, huge bands. But everybody, it was Tom Kerridge. It was this pub garden thing they were doing.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Henley, and everyone was in their cars in their individual garden bits. But the bands. I remember talking to Ricky Wilson before, and these people are like you. They've played in front of thousands of people, but they were so nervous because everyone was in their cars. They're not going to get the same reaction.
No.
You know, he's like, I don't know what we're going to do. You know, like, there's nothing worse than singing a song like I Predict a Riot and everyone's just flashing their car lights. You know, it's a different vibe. So, yeah, I think these things might go ahead, but they're going to be in that environment, which doesn't lend itself to the vibe, does it? You know, like, Procol Harum's massive. There's a reaction that you, as a giant band, expect from your audience that you would get. But now it's going to be just people sat in their cars. It's like you're just playing. You're doing your stuff, but it's going
imagine
to be
if
weird.
Rich, imagine if they couldn't laugh, but they had to flash their lights.
Well, this is what they had to do. They had to flash their lights.
Because they thought it was funny.
Yeah.
Oh, fucking hell! That's enough to do your brain in forever.
And you just, and you, you know, luckily there was a kind of, we're all in this together, so they understood how difficult it was for us, and vice versa, and. And we got through it, but it's not ideal, you know. It's not ideal. Eventually we'll be back, and eventually these big gigs will start again, and the paranoia will subside. And when we realise we're not killing each other, and I mean, you know, you've been in the industry years. What did it feel like when you first joined Procol Harum? That's a big. That must have been a. But how did you feel? Was that a scary thing? It was like, oh shit, I won't fuck this up.
That's a good question as well, because. The first band I ever saw live, and I was only a teenager. I can't remember exactly. I might have been 12 or 13 actually, so just about a teenager. Was Procol Harum.
Wow.
And I was there with my brother. My mum came. She's really into music. So she must have been about 45, I guess, at the time, 45, 50, something like that. And she would have been younger than that. And I said to my mother, I was at school at the time, and I said, that's what I'm going to do. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to play, I was playing piano anyway, but I said, I'm going to be a rock musician. I'm going to play in a band like that. And I was still at school, obviously, because I was still at school when we did, I was in my last year at school when I was involved in Quadrophenia.
Well, this is it. Yeah, cross section.
Yeah, that's another thing. But I'll go back to the program thing first.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that was 19, let's say it's 72, 73, something like that. And I decided that's what I was going to do music-wise. And then I did start doing music, obviously, and I ended up playing in lots of bands. And I was, I'd been on tour I was in Big Country for a bit, and I was on tour with Mid-Year at the time. And then Mark Brzezicki from Big Country and me, and Pete Townsend's brother from The Who, Simon Townsend, the three of us formed a band. We went to the States, we recorded some great songs, and we ended up getting a record deal with Atlantic Records. With Armour Ertegun, of course, who's no longer with us, but he started Atlantic Records, and we were doing our album. We were in the Isle of Man recording. This was about 1990, 91, something like that. And the phone rang in the control room, and I picked up the phone. I said, "Hello, studio," because anybody by the phone.
Yeah.
And this guy said, "Can I speak to Mark Brzezicki, please?" I said, not really at the moment. He's actually in the studio, just recording drums at the moment. I'll take a message. Oh, can you ask him to call this number, please? Speak to Gary Brooker.
Wow.
So I put the phone down and I thought, it's not the Gary Brooker because they broke up in 1978, but I could hear some organ in the background. They were in the studio as well. They'd reformed, but nobody knew. And Mark came in and I said, "Oh, Mark, by the way, you've got to ring this guy back." "Oh, what's that about?" I said, "I don't know. Give him a buzz." I did know, really. So he rang this guy and he came back and said, "Oh, we said I've just been asked to play on an album, two or three songs on an album with Procol Harum." He said, "How do you know that?" Because I hadn't written it on the piece of paper. And I said, "Well, I've just been speaking to the manager." I said, "No, you haven't. You've been speaking to Gary Brooker." I said, "That is Procol Harum."
Yeah.
And he said, "Oh, anyway." So he ended up doing this album and then got invited to go and start doing some live shows with them. And funny enough, they were finishing off some of the stuff at a studio, literally just down the road from where I am here now in Ripley in Surrey.
Yeah.
And Mark said, "Why don't you come down and hang out a bit, meet the guys?" So I did, and we ended up going for a pint. And Gary and I got our house on fire immediately. We're still great buddies now, all those years later. And I said one of those things that you often say in the heat of the moment where you think, "Fuck, I wish I hadn't said that." It's kind of the wrong thing. And I said to Gary, I said, "You know the second album?" I said, "B-side, third track in." He said, "Well, I know all of them. I wrote them." And I said, "Oh yeah, of course you did." That's a bit of a daft thing to say. I felt like such a dick. Of course I did. I wrote them all. It's like asking Paul McCartney, "Do you know she loves you?" "Yeah." "Yeah, of course I do. Yeah, you're fucking idiot." Anyway, so what happened is that then they went on the road, and then the organ player at the time, who had played originally on A Whiter Shade, he decided to do something else. He decided to go and read maths at Cambridge or something mad. Got invited to play with the band. And that was 21 years after I'd seen Procol Harum.
Incredible.
So not only did I say to my mother, "I'm going to do that," I didn't know at the time, I actually meant, "I'm going to do that." That must have been 1992 or 3, something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe 93. Gary was 47. He's now 74. That's how long ago it was.
Wow.
How did it feel? I tell you, it's one. I don't know how much time you've got.
No, so because the first time you sat, you'd already been for a pint. Then you're on board and like, "Right, you're gonna come on tour and you're gonna be playing." That first time you sat behind the keyboards with Procol Harum.
That was a kind of weird moment in my life. But it was also, again, there's a joke in this, because Gary's a very funny man. And we're now playing, we're in Germany somewhere. It's the first show that I'm doing. And we're in Germany, and we're it's a double bill. It's us and Jethro Tull.
Wow.
And there must have been, I don't know, 80,000 people, something like that. And I thought, we'd already done, like, you know, all of the songs. And so we were about the third song from the end. So we were going to do A Wider Shade of Pale, which, of course, is the one that everybody is waiting for. And, of course, from a keyboard player's point of view, you know, it's the one that you got to play. And I can remember inside, I felt sick. I felt excited, elated, all at the same time, emotional, all of these things. And I was thinking, and it felt like a lifetime to get on to this track, because it was only, we played a song before it, and then Gary was introducing it. But in true Gary style, he's sort of, you know, he's playing his piano, he's going, he said, ladies and gentlemen, he sounds a bit like Tommy Cooper. And he kept turning around going, sorry, what? There's 50,000 people. And he said, so this next song, everybody probably knows it. And he starts sort of suggesting, you know, what's going, kind of playing, you know, sort of bark sort of stuff. And he kept looking around, and there's 50,000 people. And I said, hang on a minute, I'm sorry about that, I've got to move my car. And he got up and walked off, which is nonsense. No rock star's about to got to go and move his car, you see. So I'm now laughing. I'm relaxed. And I'm thinking, right. He said, anyway, it goes a bit like this. 1, 2, 3. And the drummer, who was a Depp at the time, he did do quite a few gigs with us. He played the drums for the next track. And Gary stopped. Oh, stop. He said, stop. He said, do you know when you're trying to build furniture? He says, sometimes you can't find the wood. Right. And they said, it goes like this. And then we did the song. And it was like this adrenaline rush went through me. And all through it, I was feeling, is this real? Is this a weird dream? I'm playing this song. That's Gary singing there. Oh, that's right. And I'm playing the organ. And it was like a weird, it was almost the beginning of a panic attack. All in one emotion, all at the same time. I was clammy. I was shaking. I was excited. I was relieved that we were playing it. And it was like this sort of weird, fluid thing coming out of me.
And the crowd went bananas, I bet. The crowd went bananas. Opening bars.
Yeah. Anyway, and this is the funny thing afterwards. So we've now, of course, at the end of that show, because it's the first time I've played A Wider Shade, and it's the first gig under the belt, we get pretty trashed at the bar backstage. Yeah, no, at the hotel. Gary and I at the hotel now, and we're both at the bar. We got pretty pissed, you see. And this German man came up. I love the Germans, so this is not in any way meant to be derogatory.
There we go.
He came up and said, oh, excuse me. He said, I just have to say one thing. It's very lovely to meet Mr. Brooker and Mr. Phillips here. He said, but I'm concerned because you said that you couldn't get the wood. And Gary looked at me and he went, what? What's he talking about? And I said, sorry, what are you doing? He said, but tomorrow you'll play in the forest with the Jethro Tull tour, and it's a big lot of wood there, so you will be able to build the furniture.
I think it was being very dry.
Well, that was the moment, and all of those things alleviated that stress. And when I say stress, it was a nice stress. It wasn't a horrible shit. I haven't done my homework stress. It was just that feeling, like, thank God that's over, but it was also, what a shame that's over. Oh, but luckily we're doing it tomorrow. And now I've probably done, I don't know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of shows with Broken Arum since then. Because I was really adept at that point, and I joined the band permanently in 2004.
Brilliant.
So that's brilliant. 17 years ago, isn't it?
Yeah. Wow.
And we did a new album about 2 or 3 years ago, which Gary and I wrote together. Wrote most of it in this very room, in fact. How weird
no
is that?
No way.
And
that's excellent.
Yeah, so it's...
You've had loads of these moments throughout your life. Since I mean, I've known you...
A long time.
Quite a while now, 10 years or so. And you know, the stories that you tell, the gigs that I've done for you in front of it, that one we did at Kenny Jones's place. Stay with me. That was so surreal. With all those, you had members of Foreigner sat there. You had Kenny at the back, and you had Damon Hill. And all these, and I remember one minute,
Mike Rutherford there.
Yeah,
he was.
I think so.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of stood there on stage. I hadn't been going very long. I'd only been going a few years. I just remember standing there, just had a moment of fuck. this is surreal. This is so surreal. And you must have had, you've had plenty of these moments. Like you were, like we mentioned earlier, you were the band in Quadrophenia.
Yeah.
So you got to work with Roger Daltrey and Pete Townsend, and that must have been.
That's really, that was a real, stab yourself in the arm to check you're alive moment. Because there's always funny stories around these things. There's always funny stories. But I mean, I was at school, I was in my last year at school, and I wasn't doing particularly well because I really wasn't interested. I knew what I wanted to do. I mean, I remember the careers talks. I remember going into the little room with a careers officer who was probably a dodgy guy, half rim specs on, real typical sort of teacher of the 70s, you know. Mm. He said, "Now, okay, so it says here that you want to be a musician." I said, "Yep, that's right." And he said, "So what do you really want to do?" I said, "Well, I really want to be a musician. I am a musician, and that's what I'm going to do."
Yeah.
You're quite good at metalwork. I said, "Yeah." He said, "So, because I was at school in Rochester, in Kent, Chatham."
Oh,
Kent.
I know. Yeah.
And there was a dockyard there in those days, and they were trying to get everybody into the dockyards. That's what they wanted everybody to do.
Right.
So he wanted me to join the, you know, and I think I swore him. I think I was only a kid, and I said something like, "You know, what do you want me to do? Make a fucking trombone or something?" It was something like that, you know. And it wasn't long after that then I was playing in this band, Cross Section, of whom you just mentioned, and we were only kids. Yeah, we were just a gigging band, kids, doing working men's clubs and the odd pub here and there. I don't think we ever did pubs. We were too young because we were like 15, 16-year-olds. 17, the bass player, I think. But we were playing working men's clubs. And we had an advert in the Melody Maker. And it said, Do you want sex, drugs, rock and roll? That's right. Now, of course, we're only kids. Of course, we did some of that. And we sent our demo off, and we ended up getting an audition. And we were, the band auditioned at Camden Electric Ballroom in Camden Town. And after the audition, we decided to go down and get some Kentucky Fried Chicken or something. And as we were walking along, and I'm not joking, I kept seeing Roger Daltrey following us.
Right.
Down the lake, down the high street, Cameron High Street. And I said to the guys, I don't think I'm imagining this, I said, but I think we're being followed by Roger Daltrey. And they said, "Oh, shut up, you fucking idiot. Of course you're not." I said, "No, we are." I said, every time I look around, he sort of goes into a shop window, you know, stops. Anyway, so we got our Kentucky, and I said, "He's still there." We're outside our van now, and our manager was just like Aunt. He was one of the guy's dads. He was just like Arnie Fufkin from Spinal Tap. An English version. Knew nothing about the music industry or rock and roll. And Daltrey came up to us, and he said, "Hello, lads." He said, "I enjoyed that." We said, "Oh, thank you." You know, he said, and we all had long hair. He said, "Would you be prepared to have your hair cut short?" You know.
Yeah.
And our drummer said, "Yes, Diet Purple, whatever." And Bill then sort of nudges him out the way. He says, "All right." He says, "Are you interested in the boys?" He didn't know. You know, he said, yeah. He said, "Well, this is their card. This is my card." He said, give them a buzz, you know, if you want to book them." He said, "But we got to get back. We've got things to do, you see." So, he went, "Oh, thanks, yeah," and he walked off. And we said, "Bill, what the fuck are you doing?"
Yeah.
And he said, "What do you mean?" We said, "That was Roger Daltrey." He said, "I don't give a fuck who it was. I'm the manager." He said, "I've never heard of him anyway."
So, oh, no.
But anyway, we ended up getting the phone call, and we got the part. And I was a hero at school, and you know, the school teachers were talking to me, and the music teacher was saying, "Well, of course, you know, you always were going to do well." And I said, "Nothing to do with you. I haven't had one lesson from you, mate. Thank you." And that was the beginning of that. And that was really the beginning of my career as far as I was 15, nearly 16, and I was just 16. So I was really leaving school anyway. But of course, I was going to go on to music college and do all of those things that I probably should have done. But I wasn't interested because, Quadrophenia, and we thought we were done. We thought that was it. We're made. This is it. And of course, we weren't. And, we were only in it for a time. But we've got one track on the soundtrack. So that was a good call.
But this is it. One of the first albums I bought with my own money from the Virgin Megastore. I remember the day well. I went up and I bought Madonna's Like a Virgin album, and I bought the soundtrack to Quadrophenia.
Yeah, wow.
And Cross Section were on it. And I absolutely loved that version of High Heel Sneakers. Used to play it on repeat all the time. So then meeting you and you going, oh yeah, that was me, I blew my head off. Blew my fucking head off. And I've had it on in the car. I go, I know this fella. And it's
Did you know, Rich? Did you know we re-recorded it?
Really?
Yeah.
What, for the album?
No, I probably might have it in the studio here. I'll send it to you. We re-recorded High Heel Sneakers. We hadn't seen each other for 30 years, and we ended up doing the first, because I was the musical director at the Rock and Horsepower shows with Kenny Jones and all those.
Yes.
Yeah. And I said, just one thing, Ken, I'd really love to get this band back together and just come on and play High Heel Sneakers. Kenny, did he play drums? I can't remember. He was going to. I think we ended up, Jeff played in the end. But so we all got together. We hadn't seen each other for donkey's years because Dean, the drummer, lives in Norway. One of the guitar players lives in Tenerife. Another guy lives in Kent, bass player. And the singer, guitar player, he's a qualified naval, well, not naval, but qualified sea. He delivers ships. He's a captain.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we hadn't seen each other for years, and we ended up meeting up. And I think it was through social media of some form or other. We kind of got back in touch. I'd always been in touch with the drummer. He and I are dear friends. And we ended up doing... We got together. We ended up going to the pub, first of all. Of course we did. And that was really weird because we hadn't seen each other for about 30 years. So the last time we'd all seen each other, we were sort of, 16, 17. And now we're all 50-something.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, but we got together. I said, look, there's a studio next to my studio here. We can do it live. We came in and we did High Heel Sneakers and Dimples. Three runs on all of them, and it sounded like the record. And I've got it somewhere. I'll send it to you, Rich, because you might want to play a bit in if you want. It was a beautiful, one of those lovely, lovely moments in my life again where, wow, that was a milestone. I think we all have milestones, don't we, in our careers. And those milestones at the moment, again, are going to be marked, I think, by coronavirus. This is going to be a real milestone for, if you think about the way technology has advanced so rapidly in the last year, the fact that we've got a vaccine is extraordinary.
Yeah,
it's incredible. It's brilliant that science is worldwide. Just imagine if they put their heads together again and came up with cures and things for other stuff.
I know.
But milestones, when you think about when we are going to get... there's some things that have come out of this that are good. Probably because of COVID and the lockdown and stuff, your podcasts are probably more successful than if the world was normal.
Yeah, true.
There's... unfortunately for us in the music industry, we've got a few things in the way. One of them is called Spotify. Businessmen again, in the way.
Yeah.
Because, you can have, I think it's 1 million streams, or it might be 10 million. No, I think it's 1 million streams will earn you $1,200.
The record has always been that way, has it? I remember Noel Gallagher saying for every pound he earned, somebody else earned a fiver.
Yeah, that's true.
And now, my lads... I've drummed it into them. I'm like, look, yeah, you might have Spotify and you might have this and that, but you actually pay for your music, it means the bands that you love will be able to make more of it. And that's,
yeah, exactly, and people don't understand that. You know,
no.
This whole I've heard people say, "Oh yeah, well, I've got a family Spotify," and it's like, well,
yeah,
that's £10 a month, as much music as you want to listen to. I tell you what, let's do that with Costa Coffee, £10 a month, as many coffees as you want. Wouldn't last long, would it? As a business.
Exactly, exactly. Yet you're still expected to go into the studio and people don't understand how much it costs
to
put an album together.
I mean, there's a keyboard
there.
You're
expected to do it for free.
That's £3,500, that one there. There's a piano here, that's £2,500. There's an organ there, that's £10,000. There must be £100,000 worth of equipment in the studio.
Yeah.
And it hasn't been paid for by royalties.
No. And then and then musicians such as yourself or you know, the famous people will go and do an advert for whatever, and then they'll get slated for that. And you're like, look, they've got to earn their money from somewhere, and unfortunately, you're not paying for your music, so they're going to have to go and advertise jeans or whatever it is to get. You know, they're going to have to focus on selling merch at gigs and stuff like that, because there's touring is where you make your money, because you're not getting it from the revenue that you should do from recording. I don't know what I know. Fergal Sharkey's been doing some stuff about the Spotify thing, about the streaming thing, but what can you do? What can you do? It needs them to go, actually, you're right, and they just will not, will they? Unless laws change.
Well, I think also, Rich, I don't know how you feel about this, but and whether the public can sustain it and mop up a bit, but, you know, when we go back on the road, initially we're not going to be able to play 4,000 seaters. You'll be allowed 2,000 people in a 4,000 seater. So the promoters and the musicians and the crew and everybody else, we're going to have to put the prices up a bit. We're going to have to, just to start with. You know, and you guys as well, because let's say you come and do the comedy club, our comedy club, and it's 15 quid or whatever it is to get it, 10, 15 quid or whatever it is to get in. And we rely on getting as many people as you possibly can in that room.
Yeah.
So what's going to have to happen is that we're going to have to say, right, to make this work, you're going to, you know, there's only going to be half of the audience in here, but it's going to have to be 30 quid.
Yeah, exactly.
If only 30 people turned up, we wouldn't be able to pay anybody, and it's just, you know, there won't be enough money to go around at all. And I think the public are going to have to get used to that, you know, for a while. Yeah.
Well, this is what I was talking to someone the other day about that. The way they were talking was like as if everything's just going to just snap back to how it was. And I'm like, no. This is going to need to be rebuilt. You're not going to be able to be getting the money that you were getting before. So gigs such as yours, for instance, you know, we're all going to have to do it, because we're all going to have to be in it to rebuild it together. So we can't be going, yeah, well, I was getting this amount of money before, so why isn't it the same? Everything's got to start again. So our fees will be lower. The ticket prices need to be higher in order to cover even those lower fees. You know, there has to be an understanding on all levels. And I think the public need to be on that understanding as well, that in order for you to get the beautiful music and the comedy that you love, we're all going to have to chip in a bit more and take a hit here and there and to build it back up again. You know,
but you know, I'd really like to see. I would like to think that maybe the public will start to understand that you have to pay for recorded stuff as well. So you could put out a live album, Rich Wilson live at whatever. And it's £10 for a disc, or, well, discs aren't cool anymore because it's plastic. But, you know, the problem we've got is the download culture. That's the problem. The download
culture. They can't understand that. They go, well, why would I pay for it? Well, I can get it for nothing. We go, well, that's where it needs to change. That accessibility needs to change, doesn't it? That you're going to have to pay. You'll have to pay for it.
We've got it. So what are you looking forward to, Rich, most, apart from getting back on the road?
Just seeing everyone again and being able to go out, just to be that I, you know, those little things of, oh, I'll pop up the shops. Oh, I'm going to go for a wander around, you know, some charity shops, or, you know, go hunting for vinyl. I'm big on that. So, you know, or just doing things like, you know, like going to your gig, for example, was a chance for me to catch up with friends. You know, I'm not just working.
Yes.
It's actually, these are people that I love, that I enjoy the company of.
Yeah.
So now I get a chance to spend an evening with these wonderful people. And I miss that, you know, I miss that. That's what I want. I can't wait to get back to that.
It's very true. You know? It's not just the gigging. It's that social element as well.
Yeah.
I mean, us as a band being on the road sadly, we haven't. I haven't seen Matt, the bass player, for about 15 months. I've seen Gary. Gary and I, because we were quite close to each other, you know, geographically. We haven't seen each other. But when we're on the road, it's a bit like a marriage, really. You're all together every day. You're spent, you know, you're sitting next to each other on the tour bus or on a flight, or you're on stage together, or you're eating together, you're drinking together, all of that. And suddenly it's all gone out of the window. But it's not just the band, it's the crew as well. You know, we've all got a tech.
Yeah.
You've got sound man, manager, all those things. And we're really well oiled. Always at the end of the night, completely oiled. Well oiled machine. And yeah. We've got to, as you just say, rebuild it. It's almost like we've got to get that machine cranked up again and some new oil in it. And,
yeah.
You know, so psychologically, it's a massive ladder we've got to climb again, isn't it?
Yeah. And I tell you what, when they made the announcement the other day saying, oh, the roadmap back out of this mess, I did feel a little bit of anxiety because I've got used to the way things are. So I've got used to online gigs.
Mm.
I've got used to talking to people via the internet. I'm indoors quite a bit. You know, I go for a walk now and again just to keep the blood flowing. But when they said, oh, yeah, we're going back, we've got to get back out, there were, like you said before, there was an anxiety. I was like, oh, shit. Now I've got to relearn how to be amongst people again.
You know, hopefully what we... Yes, that's a big thing, isn't it? Be amongst people again. Hopefully we can... we'll overcome that, and maybe it will be more rather than less. We'll have our live world, and yes. We will have more of an online... I mean, you know, going back to 92-year-old mother, my 92-year-old mother, she has embraced WhatsApp. So
wonderful.
She's a WhatsApper. Wonderful. We do WhatsApp and FaceTime and Zoom, all of those things. She's, oh, I'm quite happy doing that, dear. And she would never have done that if it hadn't been for this dreadful virus. The world would not have accelerated that quickly.
Well, I think that's it. I think all of a sudden, you can't just, there was no room for you to sit back and go, oh, I don't really understand how it works. I'm a bit of a technophobe. You're like, no. You have to get your head around this. It's not that difficult. You need this because that interaction in any way, shape or form with another person is so important. It's so important. And I realised that halfway through this last lockdown, I realised I was shutting down. I was shutting off. I wasn't talking to people. I wasn't reaching out. And then I had some trouble and I just went, right. And I did reach out and I went, look, I need a bit of work. I need some help.
Yeah.
And I was flooded with help. People from all manner of places.
That's terrific.
And I suddenly felt myself buoyed again. I was lifted. And I'm like, oh, yeah, this is so important. We need this. We need to be able to talk to each other.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, like this now, today, me talking to you has been a wonderful catch up. It's been too long. We should have done this before.
Yeah. Well, listen, we should do it anyway. Even if we don't record it would be nice to just chat occasionally. And also your love and understanding of the music that I'm involved in as well. I've just written a Northern Soul album, which you're going to love.
Ah, yes. I love that. It was originally
for Library, but I've got a feeling it might go a little further than that. Because
brilliant.
There's this great singer that I'm working with, a guy called Jess Pyre. He's a about 32-year-old black guy, used to sing in the London Community Gospel Choir, and he sings backing vocals with Jess Glynn.
Excellent.
Has he got a voice. He's just fantastic. Really? And he and I have started writing together. And it's really cool. It's, you know.
There's Charlene Spiteri did an album a few years ago. But it had a northern soul vibe to it, and there's something about that northern soul sound that really gets me going.
It's really exciting, and in fact, I'm reading a book about. I've picked a couple of books up reading about the history of it all, and so obviously it was really born here, you know, in the north of England, but it was massive ties with the mod scene as well.
That's right, yeah.
So there's a big correlation between those two, and there's a parallel sort of universe between the mods and the Northern Soul. And I've always loved it, and I've always loved the sort of Motown thing as well. So it's kind of Motown-y, but
brilliant.
With a bit of a twist. And I think you'll like it a lot. I'll send you the cross-section stuff.
I'll send you
one of these Northern Soul tracks.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. Yeah, let me listen, because I love the Northern Soul dancing, and I do a lot of that in my kitchen, spinning around.
Excellent.
And then you wrote, and then you did the Strictly theme, which I'd forgotten you told me.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. How mad is that?
Yeah, Strictly was a thing, and that's a while ago now. God, I don't know how long ago. Well, there's some awards here. I think it was 2007 we did that.
Just casually dropped that in. There's a few awards kicking around. Yeah, anyway. I really appreciate you coming back from your mum's and doing this for me.
It's what friends are for, Rich. And I think that's the other thing that COVID has done is that it's made people think a little bit more about other people.
Yes.
Yeah, we're less insular, I hope.
Yes, you're so right, Josh. That's exactly what's happened. And people listening to this now, we get a lot of people messaging after these episodes just saying, oh, that was just lovely to hear someone else saying these things. And you've hit the nail right on the head. I think it's really underlined the importance of friendship.
Yes, very important.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very important.
And Josh, thank you, mate. I really appreciate it.
You're really more
you're a
well,
good man.
Thanks so much. You know, great for doing it. And
mate,
I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
Josh, thank you, mate.
Cheers, Rich. Cheers, Paul.
Insane in the membrane.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.